Ernie Fazio, and this is Earnestly Speaking, and we're on Long Island Radio News. And 103.9 on your dial. And we're talking to David Manning. He's a representative of the province of Alberta. And we're talking about the energy production there and what it means to the environment, what it means to the economy, and what it means to the future of how we do things in America or North America or even the world. David, this has been a very good conversation. I know you're very, very knowledgeable, and I thank you for being with me.
Thank you, Ernie. I appreciate the opportunity.
And here's my my take. I posited years ago that the people who are in the energy business should be in the energy business, not the oil business. In other words, if oil happens to be the most economical product at the time, that's what you do. When you create a new technology, you now that becomes the most profitable. And the only way that you do that is to put enormous investment in it. They're not willing to do that, as far as I can see. They're willing to do the status quo because it still makes a ton of money. Am I over the top?
Yes.
No, I'm not.
Ernie, just a couple of quick examples. TransCanada has been beaten up a lot over this Keystone Pipeline. TransCanada is one of the largest developers of wind power in New England. A lot of the big wind farms are being developed by TransCanada. And a better example is they also have power plants. The power plant, which is right in Queens, right in the middle of New York, that plant was formerly owned by Keyspan. It's now owned by TransCanada. And that plant probably represents about 25% of the power supply in New York City. During Hurricane Sandy, 50% of the power that was available in New York came out of that plant. And that's because there was an entire team, both there and in Calgary, Alberta, working to keep that plant open, even though it was right along the East River. There's a perfect example of a company that does it all, Suncor.
Is that Ravenswood you're talking about?
Suncor has major investments in wind. They also are investing in biofuels. They have biofuels plants. So there's a second example. Now, another example of using these petrodollars of sorts, the province of Alberta. We've invested in taxpayer money, $1.3 billion in carbon sequestration, storing the carbon.
Does that work? Because I read about that a long time ago, and it was a very faulty technology at the time. Is it working now?
It is working. 70% of the world's carbon that is stored mechanically is in Western Canada. And we have two big plants now under construction which will store that carbon, and that's that $1.3 billion that we've invested. And then, of course, that money is matched on a 5-to-1 basis by industry. So, yes, it works. It works best in these old oil fields of enhanced oil recovery. But the next phase, of course, and one of the things that we're funding is finding more uses for carbon. One good example is Alberta's funding running CO2 streams through algae beds. That, of course, algae love it, that the algae grows faster, and then you use the algae to produce biodiesel. So those are some good examples of where the existing energy infrastructure is funding development and expansion of other resources. And, of course, the other big piece, Ernie, is natural gas as a transportation fuel. Alberta has a lot of gas as well as oil. And now you're seeing both in,
David, I like that. I like the idea that it's used as a transportation tool, But you know what? You know what would even be better? Electric trains. I know you're going to smile when you hear it.
But electric, I know where this is going.
Maglev trains are very, very efficient. They do use electric. You will still have to produce electric, and you may still have to use natural gas to do it. But you'll get a bigger bang for your buck than you would by just using it for trucks. Now, we can use that for heavy freight now because the latest design we can put 250-ton trucks on one railroad car and move it at 300 miles an hour. The efficiency of that is that we can do that with $1,100 worth of electricity across the country instead of $6,000 worth of fuel and tolls. And
Ernie, it's important that you advocate for that, but in the near term, like today, there are diesels that are being converted to LNG, so they're using liquid natural gas rather than diesel, and, of course, a significant reduction in emissions. And at these current natural gas prices, when you've got $5 gas and $100 oil, the economics are beneficial as well. So you're seeing marine application, long-haul trucks, and diesel locomotives. So that's happening today. That's happening right now.
What I would like to see
is changing the profile.
What I would like to see is the energy companies coming to this. And I believe this at those numbers that I just gave you, $1,100 worth of electricity as opposed to $6,000 worth of gas and fuels, and doing it in 24 hours rather than 4.5 days, that's a gold mine. You know, there's a perception of me that I'm a little on the soft side, the left side. I'm a business guy. I've always been in business, and I think. You know,
and Ernie, the conversation you should probably have with the Canadians on that score would be like Hydro-Quebec. Hydro-Quebec have got 48,000 megawatts of hydropower
that they're not using.
Carbon energy. Well, they're trying to get to market. They're trying to get more to New York. They're selling it to Long Island today. But I mean, there's a perfect example where you've got a tremendous amount of hydropower, and then when you make that link, then you really have got CO2 reduction.
That's a really good idea. I haven't even approached them on this, and I'm wondering, how do I do that? Maybe you could help me.
Oh, sure. We can talk about that. I mean, the reality of it is that Canada is very, very focused on this marketplace, and there's a lot of, I mean, I'm not here to speak on behalf of Hydro-Quebec, but they have almost 500 scientists and engineers in their employ. IREC, their research institute, is one of the leaders in the world. So there's a lot of really interesting work that's going on in energy, Ernie.
You know, a number of years ago, I was at a meeting, and I said, you know, we got all this Hydro-Quebec surplus power, and we're not using it. And somebody said, well, we don't want to be beholden to a foreign country. I said, yeah, they're about to nuke us, aren't they? You know...
we feel fairly close to our American cousins, as you know. I mean, I do live on Long Island, and I work for Alberta.
I know, but you're one of those foreigners.
Sorry?
You're one of those foreigners.
Yeah, right. I married well, Ernie. A Canadian gets to live on Long Island when you marry a local girl.
Now, I've known you a long time, and you're really a quality person as far as I'm concerned. But I think we have a somewhat of a different opinion on this. But, you know, there's a lot of things we probably do agree on. So, you know...
Ernie, I think one of the issues is that there's a concern among environmentalists that this vast oil resource will all be used, and I don't know that that's realistic. I think we will continue to see R&D funded a lot by the industry itself, and that kind of technological change is how we're changing our energy use, and that's why you've got Brookhaven, you've got Stony Brook, you've got institutions right there on Long Island that are really active in this. Energy storage is the holy grail. So there's a lot going on, and this car, you know, Alberta has the first carbon charge in North America, 2007. You can't find that anywhere else. British Columbia has a carbon tax. Alberta has a carbon charge, and all that money goes.
Oh, they crucify you in America, in the states rather, if you ever came up with that. I mean, you'd be tarred and feathered, drag you through.
Well,
the streets.
It's tough, but you see, we take that money and it goes into this innovation fund, which is now $400 million at $15 a ton for carbon, and that innovation fund is funding a lot of that technology. And would be available around the world as long as the technology can be used in Alberta. You can apply to that fund for a research project to lower CO2, and that's the kind of innovation that's going on. But you're right; it's a political,
it's a tough sell down here.
Apart. It's tougher, absolutely. But Canada continues to move forward.
Well, I'm a kind of a Canada-phile. I like to go skiing there, and I know the people, and I think they're interesting, and they're really.
Well, our time of year is coming, and the other nice thing about the polar vortex.
Yeah.
Ernie was up until now. It was
who did that?
Albert.
You did that?
Yeah. Well, I like to take credit. I wish I was that smart, but it was always the Alberta Clipper. When everybody was miserable, it was an Alberta Clipper. Now we're calling it a polar vortex. So.
Well, that got you guys off the hook, didn't it?
Got us off the hook. we take what we can get, Ernie.
You know, this has been a pleasure, David. And as I said before, we do know each other a while, and we know that, and we respect each other a lot.
The
pressure that people like me put on people like you is good. It's good.
It is a positive, absolutely. And that's how innovation happens, and that's how things get funded. But Ernie, that's why constructive criticism has such an important role, pushing for technology. But it, on a constructive basis, it's much more effective, in my opinion.
Yeah, we're going to have to close out, and I agree with what you just said. This is Ernie Fazio. I've been talking to David Manning with the Alberta government. This is LI News Radio. Thank you for listening. This is Earnestly Speaking.